Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Erevin Daf Nun Gimel. We begin the brand new perek at the bottom of Nun Beis Omud Beis. We're learning today Leilu Nishmas, Magda Wolf, Mindel Bas Beryl, and tomorrow is the yahrzeit of William Cinnamon, Zev Alexander Ben Yecheskel, and all the neshamas we learned for should have an aliyah. And Yitz Hashem, everybody should have a good gebenched yor. So we begin with the brand new perek, again, bottom of Nun Beis Omud Beis, and we start. Ketzad Ma'avrin Es Ha'orim. How does one actually go and decide where a city's tchum begins to start to be counted from? Within the city, it's all Dalet Amos. So as we'll see, we basically square off a city. We make a city into a rectangle or a square. It doesn't have to be. Rashi's going to point out it's Lav Dafka when we're using the term Meruvoyin. We're going to say that it's squared. It doesn't literally mean square. It means that you make it into a structure that's straight lines on all four sides. So it's either going to be a rectangle or a square under most circumstances. We'll talk about some other potential configurations as we go through this parak. So how do you actually go and do this? So Ketzad Ma'avrin, we have the gears over here with an Ayin Ma'avrin. The moral discussion would be with an Ayin or with an Aleph. So how do you go and expand the city? How do you go to make the boundaries, the border of the city? So Bayis Nichnos, Bayis Yotze. You're going to have, in some situations, a house that's going in or a house that's going out. It's not necessarily a perfectly straight line. And one can see this in the diagrams in the Illustrated Gemara, starting on page number 63. And you can see this in diagram number 187, and we'll in a moment go to 188 and 189, and in the Perish Chai as well. You can see this in the Perish Chai on page 99 with diagrams on that page, as well as on the next page, diagram number 3. So, how do we go about actually doing this? If you have the house going in or the house going out, or if you have Pogum Nichnas, Pogum Yotze, Pogum Rashi explains is some sort of a migdal, some sort of a tower. And again, you can see this in the diagrams that I just mentioned. You have a tower. Again, it's not a straight line. Sometimes the tower is going a little bit out. Sometimes the tower is a little bit indented. So it's not going to be a straight line. That's the way Rashi understands this word pogum. The Meiri, Tosos, the Reina Hanano, they understand this pogum as being some sort of like a pigeon coop of a certain nature. It's not a regular pigeon coop, because a regular pigeon coop would not be included, but it's again some sort of a structure known as a pogum that's a housing for pigeons. So again, sometimes it extends outwards, sometimes it extends inwards, so you don't have a straight line. Likewise, Hoysham Gidudios, Givos Asar Tvachim. You had some ruins that are old houses that have been destroyed outside the walls of the city, but their housing is still more than 10 tefachim high, the walls, and this is included as part of the city. Again, you can see this in the diagrams that I just mentioned in the Illustrated Gemara. In all of these situations, or you have gishorim unefashos, gishorim are bridges, nefashos are basically some sort of a structure that was put over a grave area, a cemetery, and we have people housed in them. So Sheyesh ben Beis Dira, that there are people living here. Now, Tosus points out that this last statement is really only going back on the Gisharim, because not every bridge has like a guardhouse or a tower that makes it like part of the city. Whereas the Nefashos, by definition, if they have a place for a person to stay in, so obviously that is for, so to say, Dira purposes. So you don't have to tell me for the Nefashos. Tosus says it's really going back on the Gisharim. In all of these situations, motzin es amida kinegdon, what you do is you take the furthest outcropping part of any of these structures and you make a straight line that goes on that side. That will be the border of that city. Vosin osa is the gear. So we have, the Bach says that this is osan because it's talking about all of these things. Kimin tavla mirubas. You make it into like a plate, a tablet that is squared off. Again, Lav Dafka Rashi says that it's an actual square, but you basically make a straight line on the farthest outcropping of each structure on each side. So on the north, south, east, west side, you make a straight line from the furthest point that a house or a projection projects outward from the straight line of the rest of the city, and that is the border. That's where you make that square or that rectangle, and then you start counting 2,000 amas from that point. Actually, you'll have 70 and two-thirds amma that you're given additional beyond that, and then you count the 2,000 amas, as we'll see as we go through the parak. And in this way, you'll also gain the corners. Remember, we said that the corners are going to actually be more than 2,000 amas. It's actually going to be the square root of 2 times 2,000 amas, which we said was 2,800 amas approximately. And you can see this in the art scroll of the diagram, as well as in the Pirish Chai and in the Illustrated Gemara. And you're basically saying that you have this 2,800 area after the 72/3 amma, after you've squared off the city, that's how you calculate the tchum of a city. Now, we're going to have an interesting word discussion, and Rashi points out that all of these are lumped together in this situation because they all are following a similar pattern, and they're all dealing with various statements that Rav and Shmuel made throughout Shas, dealing with understanding of words. As Rashi says, Mishum depligi b'mashmos lashon, because they're all dealing with a different interpretation between Rav and Shmuel, and we also don't know which one said which. We don't know whether it was Rav or Shmuel that said each one of the statements, so they're listed over here. This was, again, something that they did by heart, so it was very useful to list them all together in one place, even though they don't necessarily have one anything to do with the other than this common denominator of them all being plays on certain words. So the Gemara starts off and says, Rav and Shmuel, Chatoni ma'avrin in our Mishnah, that how do you extend the border, how do you draw the line around the city, Chatoni ma'avrin, with an aleph. Now, what does that mean? Man de Toni ma'avrin, the one that used the language over here and said it's ma'avrin with an aleph, it means aver aver. As it says on the side, Pirish, Shaboltin min hachoma, aver aver. These projections, these houses or towers or pigeon coops, whatever, that are extending outwards, that are projecting outwards from the other houses or structures, so they look like aver ke'evar shaladam. They look like an arm or a limb of a person that extends out from his body. Shaboltin min ha'adam. Brings us down the name of the aruch. So that's why they use the lashon of the word ma'avrin with an aleph. Uman de Toni ma'avrin, the one who used the lashon of ma'avrin with an ayin, is like ki'isha ubra, like a pregnant woman, just like her belly extends outward, so too these projections extend outward, and that's how you go and extend the dimensions of the city to be a perfect square or rectangle. They had a similar discussion on the word morasa machpela, Rabu Shmuel. They interpreted the Morasa Machpelah in the following way. Again, we don't know which one said which. Chadamar, one of them said, it means Shnei Batim Zeh Lifnim Mizeh. It means you had an opening. You can see a diagram in Rashi here. You had the Pesach Mara. You had the opening to the cave. Then you had a Bayis Chitzo, a room that you went into. And then inside of that was a Bayis Pnimi, an inner room. So this means Shnei Batim Zeh Lifnim Mizeh. The other one said, V'chadamar, we don't know which one said which, Bayis Valiyah, it meant the two-tiered structure. You had a ground floor and an upper floor. But Aliyah Agabav, and the upper floor was on top of it. Now, Bishlam L'mandi Yomer Zeh Agav Zeh, according to Mandi Yomer, it says, it's a two-tiered structure, a two-floored structure, Hainu Machpelah. That's what the word Machpelah means. Rashi says that this is a normal language for a structure one on top of the other. However, he says, Elo leman de Omar shnei batim zeh milifnim mizeh my machpelah. Why would you use this language? A double structure. A double structure implies one on top of the other, not one inside the other. So why was it called machpelah? So according to this understanding, shekfula bezugos, that it was doubled up with pairs of people inside it. Where do we see that from? It says Mamre Kiryas Arba, that the Morasa Machpelah was found in Mamre, which is Kiryas Arba. So Amr Rav Yitzchok explains that why was it called Kiryas Arba? Kiryas Ha Arba Zugos. It had a cave inside there where the four great people, four pairs of great people were buried. Adam Chava, Avram Yisara, Yitzchok Rivka, Yaakov Leah. Of course, Rachel wasn't Zocha to be buried with Yaakov Avinu. We have the famous Kever Rachel Mavaka Abonel. She was not buried there to be able to plead to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when we went into Golos for Klal Yisrael. And obviously, Kever Rachel still remains today a place where many people go to pour their hearts out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Medrash also tells us that Esav's head was also in there because of the Kibbut of Aim that he did to his father, Yitzchak. So his head, after it was chopped off by Dun's son, so his head rolled into the Morasa Machpelah. That's what the Medrash tells us. In any event, that's the four Zugos. Then another Machlos between Rabbi Shmuel, Vahibi Me Amrafel, the Pasuk tells us in Lech Lecha that it was during the days of Amrafel when the four kings had a battle with the five kings, and one of them was Amrafel. So Rabbi Shmuel, why was he called Amrafel? Chadamar Nimrod Shmuel, he was really Nimrod. Why was he called Amrafel? Shomar Vihipil Li Avraham Avinu Besoch Kivshon Eish, because he threw Avram Avinu into the fire. We know the famous story. The Midrashim tell us that Avram made one of the idols of his father Terach. He put an axe in his hand and he made it look like he destroyed all the other idols and brought him to Amraphel. Unbelievable that Terach brought his own son to Amraphel, and Amraphel said, throw him into the fire. And that's where the word Amraphel comes from. Sh'omar Vihipil, Omar Paul, he told him, throw Avram in. That's one interpretation. The Chadamah, no. Amraphel Shmo. That was who was born. He was named Amraphel. And his nickname was Nimrod. V'lo manik roshu Nimrod. Why was he called Nimrod? Because shehimrid es kol olam kulo alav b'malchuso. Because he caused the whole world to rebel against the Kadosh Baruch Hu with the Tower of Babel. So, and that ma'isa, he caused everybody to rebel. Nimrod, let us rebel. So therefore, he was known as Nimrod. Then the last one is Vayakam Melech Chadash al Mitzrayim Asher lo yadayas Yosef. So a new king came who didn't know Yosef. So again, Rabbi Shmuel interpreted these words differently. Chadamar, one of them said Chadash Mamash. It was a brand new king. The old king died, and a new king took over who didn't know Yosef. The Chadamar Shnischashu Gzeiro Yosav. No, it was the same king, but he forgot Yosef and he created new gzeiros against Klal Yisrael. Now, Mandi Amar Chadash Mamash Dichsev Chadash. The one who says it really means a new king, because it says Chadash, then that implies a new king. However, the one who said that it was the same old king, but he just had new decrees, so why did he hold that way? So he holds because, as Rashi says, the old king died, it should have said, Vayomos HaMelech, Vayimloch Tachto, then a new king took his place, so it didn't say that. No, according to the Man Diomar, the end of the pasuk says he didn't know Yosef. How do you explain that? Of course he knew Yosef. So Gemara says, no, what does it mean he didn't know Yosef? He made it look like he didn't know Yosef. After all the wonderful things that Yosef had done to save Mitzrayim, he forgot about that. He made it like he didn't know, who's this Yosef guy? What did he do for us recently? So that's what it means, Shelo Yadas Yosef. Now, we have a simon. This is very appropriate because we're going to talk about the importance of making simonim in a few moments. So we have simon, shmona esrei, ushnei masar, lamadnu, and the girsa that we have is bedavid vayiven. On the side it says it really should be bedoro libon. So we'll see in a moment. These are all Rashi tables of the subjects that we're about to go and discuss. So it starts off. Amar Yochanan. Yochanan said, Yudches yomim gidalti etzarev oshaya beribi. I grew up by Rav Hoshaya Beribi. Beribi Rashi says, a lashon of like shlita, gadol hador. It's somebody who's the most important person in his generation is known as Beribi. So Rav Yochanan said, I had this chus to learn 18 days by Rav Hoshaya Beribi. However, v'lo maniti menu eladover echad b'mishnaseinu, but I only learned one thing from him, b'mishnaseinu. We'll have a couple of different interpretations exactly what this means. On the surface, it means I only learned one thing about our Mishnah. And what was that? Ketzad ma'avrin es ha'arim. Our Mishnah, how did you pronounce the word ma'avrin? How did you spell the word ma'avrin? He says ba'alif. You put an alif there, like the lashon that we had, aver, aver. Not with an ayin, like lashon of ubra. So the more questions is, really, ini? Rav Yochanan only learned one thing from Rav Hoshaya Beribi? From Rav Yochanan, you'd base talmid ma'yul Rav Hoshaya Beribi. Rav Hoshaya Beribi had 12 talmidim, and in the Yudches Yomim Gidalti Benem, and the 18 days that I learned over there, v'limadati leiv kol echod v'echod, I was zocheh to see all the tremendous chokhmah that each of these people had. Rashi says, kama yom uchudod, how sharp each of them was. Hikarti macharif v'siyesh mizel zeh. I was able to, while learning with them, to see how sharp each one was in this area, that area. The chokhmas kol echod v'echod. I was able to see the chokhmah, kama zeh chokhm izeh, v'kama lomad yosem imenu, how much each one learned, because we were learning so much during that 18-day period of time. So how can he say he didn't learn anything during that period of time? So the Gemara answers, no. He saw about them how great they were. He saw this person's harif was, this person's knowledge, this person knew this. However, Gemara lo gomar, but he didn't learn from them. That's what it meant, that he only learned this one thing in the Mishnah, ma'avrin with an aleph. Alternatively, from all of these Talmidim, these other 12 Talmidim, he learned a tremendous amount. However, from Rav Hoshaya Beribi himself, lo gomar, he only learned that one Mishnah from him, ma'avrin with an aleph. And finally, last teretz v'boy seima, it says dover echad b'mishnah seinu ka'amar. He said, I learned one thing in Mishnah from him, as Rashi points out. However, he learned many gemaros and he learned many brisos in addition to this Mishnah. Furthermore, v'amar Yochanan kishinu lomdim torah etzav Rav Hoshaya Beribi, when he was learning by Rav Hoshaya, hayinu yoshvin arba bi'ama. They were so interested in hearing what the Rebbe had to say. They packed close together to get close to the Rebbe. They were four people in one ama. Rebbe said, Kishinu lomdim Torah etzor b'elozim v'shamua. An earlier sage, they learned by Revelozim v'shamua, the great Revelozim v'shamua, so they packed him in so close. They wanted to hear what the Rebbe had to say. Hani yoshu shisha shisha b'ama. They were so packed together to get near the Rebbe that there were like six people in one ama. Amar Yochanan, Rav Hoshaya Beribi b'doro k'Rav Meir b'doro. Rav Meir was known as one of the greatest chachamim of all time. And Rav Yochanan is saying that Rav Hoshaya Beribi in his generation was like the Rav Meir of his generation. He was like Rav Meir in his generation. Ma Rav Meir Bedoro, just like Rav Meir in his generation, lo yochlu chavei Rav, lamod al sof daito, nobody could figure out the depths of Torah like Rav Meir. And Rav Meir, as Rashi points out and reminds us, we had early in the Masechta, he could argue both sides of every argument and convince them either way. That's how smart he was. And that's why we don't pass like Rav Meir. I mentioned the other day. They don't pass like Rav Meir because Rav Meir was so smart, they couldn't always understand everything he said. So they said, well, we can't understand him, so how can we paskin like him? Because we really don't understand what he's saying. So therefore, they often go against Rav Meir, even though he was so smart. But the bottom line is, Rav Meir in his generation was so smart that even his chaverim, the other Tanaim, couldn't fully understand the depths of his learning. So too, after Rav Hoshaya, in his generation, Rav Hoshaya, years later, l'yochlu chaverov lamot al sof daito. He was so much above everybody else, they couldn't fully fathom what he was saying. Another statement, Rabbi Yochanan, Liban shel Rishonim kipiskel shel ulam. The breadth of understanding, the hearts of the Rishonim, is like the width of the ulam, which Rashi reminds us is 20 amma wide. Shel Achronim, the later sages that came in the next generations, we always say, Niskatnu adoros, as we go further away from our Sinai, we get smaller. And therefore, the next generations, Shel Achronim, kipiskel shel hechel, only like as wide as the pesach of the hechel, which is only 10 amma wide. So there was a diminution in their abilities. And then Rabbi Yochanan concludes, "V'anu us kimelo nekev machat sitkis. We are only like the eye of a needle. Kimelo nekev machat means the eye of the needle, sitkis." Rashi explains, "Machat shetofrin bo sitke begodim, like a needle that used to sew up clothing that has tears in it. V'hu dak miyos, it's very, very small." So the Rishonim were like 20 amma wide. The ones that came after was like 10 amma wide, and we're like the size of a very small eye of a needle. Again, the Mefarshim explained what these allusions, ideas allude to, but basically it's Niskatnu Hadoros. The generations have diminished over time. The further we go from Har Sinai, the smaller we get, not the greater that we get. The opposite of what evolution and secular society say is that we come from apes and that we're so much superior to them. We believe the exact opposite. Then it says, who are these Rishonim? Rishonim is Rabbi Akiva. Achronim, who is that? Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. And Ika, the Amri, others say, no, the Rishonim is Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, and the Achronim is Rabbi Shai Beribi. And who are we? V'anu, kimlo nekev, machat sitkis. We, in our generations, are just like this eye of the needle compared to them. Amar Abaye, Abaye says, v'anan, ki sikhso begudo l'gmora. In terms of our ability to know Gemara, Rashi explains this means, we're not able to really understand it. That's what Gemara means, to really understand the Gemara. And we're like kisichsa, like some sort of a peg, beguda, in a wall. So that's how much we penetrate. Not even like they did, they used to have a hole the size of a small needle. We're not even able to make some sort of an indentation even in the wall. We're barely like a peg in a wall, which is a difficult thing to get into a wall. Amar Rava, Ba'anan, ki etzba also bekira l'svara. He says, in regards to our svara, in our ability to understand something, so we're like shaiva kosher, Rashi says, like hard wax. She'ena etzba yochol likonis b'socha, that our finger can't really get in, ela midvak ba'ad, it pushes in a little bit. But that's how difficult we are in understanding svara. Amar Vashi, a later generation, the end of the Gemara, Anan ki etzbaso bebira l'shilcha. He says, our ability, however, to forget, we're very, very far surpassed over all of them. So we're like putting a finger in a pit. So it's very easy to put a finger in a pit. That's how good we are in terms of shichicha. The others before us were so much better than us in every way. Niskatnu hadoros. Those people that lived in Yehuda, that were very makbit on their language. Rashi explains that they always spoke the Loshon Tzach, in a nice, clear language, and not in a disgusting or not nice type of a language. So, therefore, since they spoke nicely, niskaima toros b'yodim, they were successful in maintaining their Torah learning. B'nei gadol shalok pido l'shonam, in the Galil, they were not as careful about their language. So, lo niskaima toros b'yodim, they weren't successful. So, more questions. Really? Mide b'kpeida talya milsa, is talking nicely or not talking nicely, that's going to determine whether you remember your learning or not? So, that's incorrect. Ella, b'nei Yehuda, didaike lishna, that they were very careful in what they learned. Rashi says, L'chazer b'osu loshon shushomim mirabim. They would repeat it over in the exact words they heard from the Rebbe. La'idei shushomim apishmua acharshmua. And since they listened to it over and over, they repeated it exactly over and over, ha'yinosim bem simon zu acharzu, they would make simonim, like we just had, to help them remember the Gemara. U'misnachilu simonim, as the Gemara says, they made the simonim, Niskaima Torosum Biyodam. So they were successful in maintaining their learning. They were able to remember their Torah knowledge. However, Bnei Golil, the Lo Daiki Lishna, they weren't doing this. They weren't as careful. They didn't make these Simonim. Lo Niskaima Torosum Biyodam. They were not successful in remembering all their Torah learning. Then it says further, on the side it says, V'boy Yisema, another interpretation, what's the difference between Bnei Yehuda and Bnei Golil? Bnei Yehuda, Gamru Michad Rabba. In the Bnei Yehuda, they learned from one Rebbe. They tried to stay with the same Rebbe, and therefore, Niskaima Taras and Biyodim, because the Rebbe kept on teaching them the same way, in the same language, in the same type of style, and they were successful, therefore, in learning and in maintaining their Torah learning. Bnei Gadol, the Lo Gamre Michad Rabba, they learned from many different Rabbeim, different styles, different ways of learning, Lo Niskaima Taras and Biyodim. They were not as successful in remembering all the Torah. Ravina adds a different thing. Ravina Omar Bnei Yehuda, the Golum Asechta. Ravina says that the Bnei Yehuda, who were Golu Masechta, Rashi explains that the words Golu Masechta means that they taught it to others, Limdu Le'acherim. Alternatively, he says, Lishnach Rina, Mefarshin Shmosein, they were very careful in explaining what they said, Umedaktikim B'taymo Shel Dover, and to understand it, Achim Yisyashe Beliban, until they felt that it was very comfortable and that it was satisfying to them. So therefore, in the Bnei Yehuda, where they did this, the Golu Masechta, others explain, the Miri brings down, that they would give out notes beforehand. They would give out the Mar Makomos. They would tell people what the Mashiach would be on so they could study it. So therefore, Niskaima Terasa, so they were more successful in their learning. Niskaima Terasa Biyodim. Bnei Galil, the Lo Galil Masechta. In the Galil, they didn't do this. They didn't either teach it or they didn't learn it so well. They didn't hand out the Mar Makomos. Lo Niskaima Terasa Biyodim. They weren't that successful. Now we give an example. David, Gali Masechta. David was very medactic to go and do this. As the Gemara in Bracha says, Rashi brings down Daf Dalid, Sho Yogeya Betorah. He worked and hard at his Torah learning, and he would teach the halachos carefully in front of his Rebbe, Viboshes, his hands filled with the blood of Dam and Shvir, Vishuya. He would go through these difficult need the shilas, and he would actually get himself dirty, literally and figuratively, trying to figure out what the right answer is. So that's called Gali Masechta. And that's why we always paskin like David. The Gemara there told us that we paskin always like David HaMelech. Even when Mephibosheth, his Rebbe, said he was wrong, ultimately Kileab, David's son, that's why Kaleab, he removed the embarrassment from his father, where Mephibosheth said that David was wrong. Kileab subsequently proved that David was right, and Mephibosheth, his Rebbe, was wrong. However, Shaul, we contrasted with Shaul, Lo Gali Masechta, Shaul did not take this attribute, and therefore he was unsuccessful. We don't pask like him. Now, nobody should think for a second that Shaul was not a huge tzaddik, and it brings down on the side the Rashi for the Gemara in Gittin. Shaul Gadol Bitaraya. Shaul was a huge Gadol. The Gemara in Yuma says he was greater than David. Ela Shalo Limeid Lacherim. But he didn't teach his Torah to other people. Like the Gemara in Erevin says, Shaul Lo Gali Masechta, and therefore Shaul was not as successful. David Gali Masechta. How do we know that David was successful? How do we know this? That he was Gali Masechta. Because it says about him, Yiriyecha Yiruni, people who fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when they see you, V'yismachu, they will be happy. In other words, they'll be happy that David is such a great teacher. However, in regards to Shaul, the Lo Gali Masechta, so Ksizbe, it says about Shaul, the gears we have is El Kol, but it says on the side, it should be Uber Kol, Asher Yifneh Yarshia. We turn to the Amid Beis. In every way that he turned, he unfortunately was Yarshia. Rashi says, Lo Hiya Zoche Lohoros Kalochi. He wasn't Zoche to have that Locha come out like him. Again, Gemara in Yuma tells us that Shaul was a great, great, great tzaddik. And he was head and shoulders above everybody else. And he had no skeletons in his closet, and that was his ultimate undoing, as opposed to David, who had lots of skeletons in the closet, and he was ultimately successful. Rabbi Yochanan said furthermore, Minayin Shemoch HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al Oso Ova, and how do we know that Shaul was ultimately forgiven? He did things wrong. He actually said the whole debacle with Nov Ira Kohanim, where he killed them all because they helped David HaMelech, so he was ultimately forgiven by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As I said, Shaul was a great tzaddik. Shenemar, Mocher Atov Enecha Imi, when Shaul couldn't find out when he win the battle against the Plishtim, so he brought up Shmuel through this black magic, through necromancy, the witches of Ein Dor. So the Navi tells us that Shmuel tells him, Mochar tomorrow, Ato Venecha Imi. You're going to die. You and your three sons died in the battle against the Plishtim, but you'll be Imi. What does that mean? Imi b'mechitzasi. You'll be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Shamayim. So he ultimately was forgiven. Now the Gemara says, Amar Biaba, Iiko de Mashalu, Bnei Yehuda, the Daiki Lishne. If somebody goes to the Bnei Yehuda and asks them about their carefulness in their language, so you'll hear them say, Ma'abrintan, or O Ma'abrintan. They'll ask, do we do it with an aleph or with an ayin? Or akuzu tnan or akuzu tnan. With an aleph or an ayin, the word akuzu. Rashi explains, akuzu is a Gemara in Bechoros, where it talks about various mumim, and it says there, she'en lo ela beitza achas, if an animal only has one beitza, hareza mum, it's considered a mum. So Rekiva Omer, moshivin oso al akuzo, you go and lift the animal up and turn it upside down on its tush, on its behind, umamayach, and you squeeze there, so miyesh beitza acheres, so for lotzeis. And if there is another testicle there that didn't descend, so now it will be descended. They'll force it to descend, and that, therefore it would not be a mum. So this word akuzo could be spelled with an aleph or with an ayin. So these people in Bnei Yehuda were medayik in the language, so ask them whether it's with an aleph or an ayin in both ma'abrin and an akuzo. So yadei. Now, the simple understanding of this is they will know. Rashi says, Hayyodit. So go and ask them, they will know. The Rashash says that Yodit was the name of a Talmud Chacham. Go ask this Talmud Chacham over there in the Bnei Yehuda. In any event, Shilu, they went and asked them, of Amrilei, and he told them, or they told them, Iko de Tane Ma'abrin, Viko de Tane Ma'abrin, Iko de Tane Akuzo, Viko de Tane Akuzo. Some learn Ma'abrin with an aleph, some with an ayin, some learn Akuzo with an aleph, some with an ayin. Both are correct. Mark continues, Bnei Yehuda, the Daiki Lishna, we said that the Bnei Yehuda, they were very Medaic in their language. So what exactly does that mean? Mahi. So Mark says, Dahu bar Yehuda, the Amalahu. There was a person in Yehuda who said the following, Talis Yeshli Limkar. I have a talis to sell. So everybody said, no, what color? Amrule. My Gavin Talischa. What color is your talis? We'd like to buy it maybe. So Amalahu told them, he wanted to be very, very specific. He was Daik, Medaic in the Losho, Kitardin, it's like beads, Ale Adamo, that are in the ground or on top of the ground. So therefore, they would know exactly the color he was referring to and there wouldn't be any Mekartos. As opposed to Bnei Golu, the low likely Lishna, the Bnei Golu, they weren't so careful in the language. Mahi, what's an example of that? So the Girsa that we have is the Tanya, but it's not clear that there's a price, so that's why it's in parentheses. So it says, the Hau Bar Galil, the once was a person who came from the Galil, the Abi Ka'azil Varmalu, he went and asked people who he was looking to buy something, and he asked them, Amar Leman, Amar Leman, does anybody have Amar? Does anybody have Amar? Now, they couldn't understand him clearly, Rashi says. They couldn't tell whether he was saying Amar or Hamar, and they couldn't understand what type of object he was actually looking for. And therefore they said to him, Armule, Gililo, Shote, you silly, stupid Galilean, Chamar Lemirkov, are you looking to sell a donkey? That's with a ches, or Chamar Lemishte, or you're looking for wine. Chamor and Chamar are two different things. A Chamor is a donkey, a Chamar is wine. So I remember hearing once from a wine shlita. So he said, if you want to tell what the Gemara means by Chamor, if it means a donkey or wine, it says you tell by the kick that you get from it. Very, very cute. In any event, so they couldn't tell whether he was saying chamar or chamor, or amar with an ayin, lemilbash, meaning that you want to go purchase some wool, or oimar with an aleph, which means a sheep, liistik saw, as Rashi says, to go in shecht. So therefore, the person from the Galil didn't speak clearly. Likewise, hayisso de boile me melechaverto, there once was a woman who said to a friend, toy de ochle chelba. Now, the Gemara here is going to go through a bunch of a very esoteric type of derivations of the wording, and we'll rely heavily on Rashi to explain this. Bottom line is, in each of these scenarios, a person wasn't careful with their language, and they said something that ended up being a very negative or inappropriate thing to say. So this woman started off over here and used this language of toy de ochlich chelba. So Rashi explains, ha'yisirotzel omar bo'i v'ochlech chaylev. Come and eat with me some chaylev. However, Beinu Mefereshes, she didn't say it clearly, lachtoch tevos zu mizu, she wouldn't pronounce things very carefully, ulashmiya kol teva v'teva, and to say each letter, each word distinctly, umetztarfo shtei tevos kachas, and she ended up jumbling words together, umegamgemes ha-tevos, and didn't say it clearly. But Omeris, and it sounded like she said, tachlich lovi, a lion should eat you. So Amra law. So instead of saying toi de ochlich chelba, please come and eat some fat with me. Instead, she ended up saying Amra law shlochti. Rashi explains shlochti means she was using a lashon chaverti. Wrote Salama shlov si with a beis, and instead it sounded like shlochti, which means to go and kill. Shlochti tochlich lovia. A lion should go and eat you. Another example, Hai Itso the Asya Lakami de Dayana, a woman came in front of a judge, and Armalay, she said to the judge, Mari Kiri, my master, but instead of using the word, Rashi explains Kiri, which is the Kuf, which would be pronounced a little bit differently, which means Adon, instead she said chiri with a chaf, which means evet. So say my master, my slave, instead of my master, my lord, or some lashon like that. And she said, furthermore, tafla hovisli, that literally means over here I have a beam. What she wanted to say, rotz lomar tavla hovisli, I have a plate of some sort, for amra tafla instead, which means a beam. The ganvuch min, that's what she said. The Bach changed it around and said ganvuch means kimo minoi, for me. She wanted to say rotz lomar ganvuch mimeni, was stolen from me, but instead said amra ganvuch min, dimashma she ganenvu es hadayan, that they kidnapped the judge. And uchedu havas, which literally means now. She wanted to say Akshov, but instead the Kad Shadru Yelave, when they hang you on it, is what she said. Lomati Karichaara, your feet won't reach the ground. She wanted to say that this item was large, that you, if you sit on it, your feet won't touch the ground. But again, because of her imprecise lashon, Rashi explains, she ended up saying something terrible. Further, Amosa Devi Rebbe, when Rebbe's maidservant, we had many discussions already in the past about Rebbe's maidservant. She's a very great woman. She was able to go up against the entire Beis Medrash. They all davened for Rebbe to live, and she saw the pain and suffering that Rebbe was in. And she davened that Rebbe should be taken. Originally, she davened that Rebbe should live, but then she saw the suffering, and she davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Rebbe should die. And her tefillos were able to negate all the tefillos of the entire Beis Medrash. She was obviously a great woman. So Amosa Devei Rebbe, the maidservant who was taking care of Rebbe, his nurse, Ki Havi Mishtoi B'Loshin Chochma, she was also taking care of the house. So when she wanted to speak in a manner of Chochma, it's impolite for her to go tell the Talmidim, leave. It was time for them to go. So she said, Ami Hochi, she said, Elis Nokfas Bakad. The kaf, the ladle, is hitting the bottom of the barrel. In other words, there's nothing left in the barrel. Yidun Nishraya Likineon. Let the eagles fly back to their nests. So what this basically means is there's no more wine over here, the meal is over, and it's time for everybody to go home. So therefore, she said this in a polite sort of a way that it shouldn't be that the maidservant is dismissing all the Talmidim. Other times, when there was plenty of wine, plenty of food, the Chad have a boy the last one, and when she wanted them to stay longer, there was Baruch Shem food for them. Have a amulhu. So she said to the Talmidim, Yadei Bosa Chaverto Mino. You have one thing should follow the other thing that's like it. Others say instead of Bosar, it should be Keser. In other words, when they took out the stopper over here of the barrel, we're opening up another barrel. And we'll put the stopper with the original stopper from the first barrel. In other words, v'tiskefe ls bekad, and there's going to be over here this, the kaf, the ladle, is going to be able to float in the top of this barrel, just like a ship floats. Ki ilfo de ozlo b'yama. In other words, there's another full barrel of wine over here. Everybody's welcome to stay. Similarly, Rav Yossi bar Asyon, ki havi mishtoi b'lshon chochma, when Rav Yossi bar Asyon was also talking in this Lashon of Chochma, so he would say as follows. Why they would do this, they didn't want other people to understand, and only people that would understand this Lashon of Chochma could figure out what they were saying. So the circumstances, we're not familiar with exactly what they were trying to hide, what they were trying to be secretive about, but in any event, when he would want to say something, so here's an example of how he would say it, Lashon of Chochma. Amri said, Asuli shor b'mishpat b'tur miskein. He said, literally, go and get an ox for me to do mishpat with, and use this on a impoverished mountain. So he really wanted them to go and prepare for him tardin. Tardin is beets. It's a play on the word tour. And he wanted them to put it in chardol. So that's a play over here on the word har. Char and har are similar. And dal means a poor person. So this chardol was tur miskein. So in other words, he said it in sort of this riddle type of a language, this secretive type of a language, in order that only the people that would know this would understand what he wanted. Similarly, v'chad avishol b'yushpiza amahachi, when he would want to know how an innkeeper, yushpiza is the innkeeper, how the innkeeper was doing, so he would use the following language. Again, this lashon chochma. Givar pum dein chai. Now, Rashi explains, Givar Pum Dein is basically the nutrikon of Ush Bi Za. Ush means Ish, that's Gvar. P is Pum, it's mouth. And Dein means Ush Bi Za, this, Zeh. So therefore, and he's asking, Chai, are they alive? Others explain, he was asking, is it good over here? Is it going to be good food over here? So, Mazeh Tuva Yesh. Then this next thing we'd ask is, how are things for this person? So he used it in this Lashon, Mazeh Tuva Ish, as Rashi explains, Kilomar Kama Tovlo, is he okay? Similarly, Rabbi Yavoh, Havi Mishtoi B'Losh Chochma, Rabbi Yavoh wanted to speak in this language of wisdom, so he would say as follows. Hav Omer Hochi, he would say the following. Asrigu lepechomim. He says, go and make for me coals that are like an esrog. So what does that mean? He says, have them put the coals up and let them glow like an esrog is going to glow, and we'll be able to go and use the coals. Our kiul is hobin, and then spread out the gold, in other words, the coals that are glowing, and basuli shnei magide balota, and go and get me two of those things that tell you when the night is over. In other words, get two roosters. The roosters are la'avchim ben yom ve'loila, like we say every day in the davening. So therefore, get me two roosters to eat. In other words, go and make for me, go cook for me two roosters. Fine. Another one, Amulei Rabbi Abban, Rabbi Abbahu. Rabbi Abban said to Rabbi Abbahu, Hatzpineinu Heichon Rabbi Eloi Tzofun, please show us where Rabbi Eloi is hiding. Now, what did Rabbi Abbahu tell them? Amulei, Rabbi Abbahu says, no, I can't. Olatz Binara, he was very happy with a young person, a young woman. Ahoranis, she was a Kohen, she was from the tribe of Aaron. Achoranis, she was the last one. Aaronis, she's waking him up, Vihinirato, and she woke him up, and therefore he's now sleeping, Rashi says, and I can't go and get him for you. Now what does this mean? So Amrila, some say it was an Ishov, Amrila Masechta. When Rabbi Yavoh was saying that they couldn't go and get Rabbi Eloi, it's either the first opinion was that he had a new wife, he got married, and he was with her that night, and she'd kept him up at night, and now he's sleeping, he's tired in the morning. Others say, no, it was a Masechta, he learned a brand new Masechta. And Ahoranis means he just finished Kachim, and now he was starting a new Masechta. And therefore, that's what kept him up awake all night. Amelie Rabbi Eloi, others said, to Rabbi Eloi, Hatzpineinu Heichon Rabbi Yavoh Tzofon. Others said it the other way around, that it wasn't Rabbi Yavoh being asked, where's Rabbi Eloi? It was Rabbi Eloi being asked, where's Rabbi Yavoh? And he told them, Amar Lahan, Nisyoyetz B'machtir, he has asked for advice from the Kesser, from the crown. In other words, he asked the Rabbanim what he should do. V'hingiv, that means Negev, he went south, L'Mifiboshes, to Mifiboshes. Now Mifiboshes, we mentioned previously in the Shia today, actually, he was the Rebbe of David HaMelech, he was a grandson of Shaul HaMelech, and he was David's Rebbe. And he is a usage, when we use the term like Og Melech HaBashim, we use that as a general term for a giant. So Mephibosheth, the Gemara in Brachos tells us, was a word that was used for a person who was a Talmud Chacham. Mephibosheth was a great Talmud Chacham. In any event, so he said, I got permission from my Rebbe to go south, where the great Talmud Chacham were, to go learn by them. Now we go on and we say, Amar Rishu ben Chananya. Rishu ben Chananya tells us the following, Miyom Elo Nitzchani Odom, in my life I never lost a debate. I always would win every debate. And the Gemara in Sota, in fact, tells us that when Yoshua ben Chananya died, Klai Yisrael was bereft of their best debater, of the person who would always be the articulator of the Jewish approach to the Roman Senate, and he would always win and help the Jewish people out. And when he died, Nebuch, we lost this great person, Rabbi Shua ben Chananya, ability to do so. So Rabbi Shua ben Chananya here tells us in our Gemara that he never lost a debate. I always would win. With three exceptions. Chutz me'isha, a story with a woman, which we'll have, a tinok, a story with a little boy, and v'tinokis, and a little girl. Not sure why he has this order, because we're actually going to give the stories in the order of isha, tinokis, and then tinok, but that's the order that was given over here. So the Gemara says, isha mahi. What was the story with the woman, that he lost the debate to a woman? So the Gemara tells us, pamachas nisarach di etzel achsanya chas. Rabbi Shuvah Chananya says, one time I was going to a certain hotel. Nisarachti Eitzel Achsanya, I was by a certain innkeeper, and Osli Polit, and she made me supper. She made me some beans. Biyom Rishon, she made it for me. Achaltim, I ate it all up. Below Shiarti Mem Klum. And I didn't leave any behind. We'll see that those days, the tip is different than the tip that you put on the table today for the waitress. In those days, you'd leave over some of your food for the waitress. They didn't have any food. And as we'll see, it wasn't polite for them to go take food before all the guests had food, and they poured out all the food to the guests. And anything left over, they were entitled to. So it was considered proper manners. Again, won't question the hygiene of this, but it was considered proper manners to leave over some of your food for the waitress. And he did not do so. Either wasn't familiar with this custom or just didn't do it. In any event, Rabbi Shmuel Chananya didn't leave anything over. Second day, same thing happened. Shnia, v'lo shi'ati mehem klum. So the third day, she said, I have to teach Rabbi Shmuel Chananya proper manners. V'yom shlishi, hichdichasan b'melech. So Rabbi Shmuel Chananya relates, on the third day, she burnt his food with salt. In other words, Rashi explains, she put in too much salt and ruined the food. And he tasted it and it was horrible. So kivon shita amti, mashachti yodamihen. As soon as he tasted it, it was too salty and he pushed it away. Amali, she said to me, how come you're not eating today? What's wrong with the food? So Rebbe, Mebe Ma, in Chasoid, how come you're not eating? So he didn't want to tell her the food was not good. So Amarti La, so Rebbe Yeshua B'chanani said to her, no, Kavar Sa'adati Mimbojam, I already ate, so I'm not hungry. She said, if you already ate, how come you ate all the bread up? Amali, if you already ate, Hoyali Lim Luchal Lim Shoch Yodechim in a pas. If you really ate already, so you shouldn't have eaten all the bread, but you ate up all the bread. So obviously you were hungry. So Amuli, so she then told me, Rishu B'chanani says, the lady said to me, maybe Rebbe Shem Elohi Nachto Pe'a B'Rishonim. Maybe the reason why the food is salty is because you didn't leave over a tip on the first 2 days. And she's teaching him very politely that that's an improper thing to do. The appropriate, accepted way is that you go and leave some of your food. And you didn't do so, so I'm teaching you a lesson in a very polite way. And she said, this isn't me just talking, because the rabbi said this is the right thing to do. The Rashi understands this, that you're not allowed to go and have the servants take the food when it's still in the pot. So let's say you have a big chalm pot and you're dishing out the food. You can't say, oh, here's a portion from the pot to give to the servants. But every individual person should leave over some on his plate to give to the waitress. And that's the proper way to do it. That's the way Rashi understands it. Tosfos has a little bit different understanding. It says it depends on what type of cooked dishes you're talking about. I ain't showing in the last Tosfos. So that's the story where Rabbi Yeshua B'chanani says that he was bested in debate by the woman. Where's the story with the Tinokes? Tinokes Mahi, what's that story? So Pamachasi Yisi Mahalach Vodera. One time he was going on the road and he saw a path that was going through what was a private field. The sada is a private field. And he walked through it. So a little girl said to him, hey, Rabbi, lo sada hi zu, you're going through a private area. How are you allowed to walk through here? So Amarati lo. So he told this little girl, no, it's a public property. Lo, derech kavushi. This is a private, not a private road, this is a public road. Amarli. So she said to me, oh, it's only because people like you did this. Listim kemoscha. Thieves like you, Kivshua, they made this private property into a public property. They made their own easement over here when they weren't allowed to do so. And she was taka right. Finally, the third case, Tinok Maihi. What's the story with the Tinok? So, Pamachos Yisim Halach Vaderach. One time he was going on the road. Where you see Tinok Yoshev Al Parashas Drochem. And he saw a child that was at the crossroads in the road. Vamayatilo. And I asked him, which way to get to the town? The Ezaderach Nelech Lir. How do we get to the city? So, they could go this way, left, or you go right. So Amali, so he told me, Zuk Tzara Varucha, this way to the left is shorter and longer. Vizu, and this way to the right is Arucha Uktzara, and this one is longer and shorter. So Rabbi Shmuel Chanani didn't question that strange language, and he just assumed when he said the shorter, longer road is the better one to take. But Lachti Biktzara Arucha, so Rabbi Shmuel Chanani relates, he said, I took the path that he described as Tzara, short and longer. And what happened? Kivan Shigati Lir, it was a short distance to the city, but it was impassable. Motsasi Shemakivan also Ganosu Pardesin. There was all sorts of gardens over there and orchards over there, and it was impossible to get through. It was like bushes that were blocking him from getting into the city. So he had to go all the way back. Chazati Lacharai. And he gets back to the Tinok over there. And Amarti Lo, hey, what were you doing? Bini, hello, Amarti Liksara. You told me this is the shorter way to go, but I can't even get through. So the boy said, listen, Rabbi, I told you, Amarli, I told you it was short, but I also told you it was long. You should have listened to me. So Yeshua Chananya kissed him. Nishakti al Rosho. He was very pleased that this boy was so smart. And I said to him, Ashrechem Yisrael, praiseworthy are Klai Yisrael. Shekulchem chachomim gedolim atem. You're all very, very smart. From Yigidolchem, from your older ones, even ad kitanchem, even to your very young children. We don't have the time right now to go into this in greater detail, but I've actually explored all of these stories in my sefer, Women of the Talmud, and just Bekitzur Nimrutz. So the Ben Yehuda says that none of these stories actually occurred, but they're here to teach us certain ideas. What are the ideas? The Marsha explains that in the first case with the woman, she was actually a widow, and he should have been more kind in terms of making sure that he didn't do something that would hurt her. And the Vilna Gaon said that she was saying, now you'll leave the proper amount, because you couldn't eat anything on the third day, so it was too salty. So now you're leaving over everything. You should have left me over some on the first day, the second day, and then you wouldn't have to leave me over everything on the third day. The Marsha adds, why did they have this custom? Why not give her straight from the pot? So they wanted to make sure that she ate from what everybody else had, so she could make sure that everybody had a good portion, so she tasted everybody's portion. Why didn't Rabbi Shua ben Chananya do this? So the Marsha says he maybe didn't know this custom. Alternatively, it was only a custom, and he didn't have to do it. In the Sefer by the Ben Yoda, in his Sefer known as Ben Oyo, he suggests that he actually left over a piece of the meat for the woman, but she wanted to teach him that you also have to leave over some of the side dishes as well. Alternatively, he also suggests that maybe Rabbi Shmuel Hananya wanted to show how delicious the food was, so he cleaned this whole plate. He ate everything on the plate, and this is, or it was trying to praise her, but instead it was actually something that was negative. In the case with the little girl, so the purpose of the Gemara is to teach us that even though everybody's doing something, if it's wrong, it's wrong, and you can't do it as well. The fact that everybody made it into this public easement doesn't mean that you're allowed to go and do this. This really is a good point to stop, so we'll stop the share today. All the neshamas we learned for should have an aliyah. Everybody should have a good Shabbos.